when you have people who have that addictive personality, and I would argue there are far more food addicts out there than people realize, they can't just have that one cake. It is like having that cigarette after 10 years and thinking, oh, I can have just one. No, you can't, because the next day you're buying another pack of cigarettes.
Hello, and welcome to the Plant Prescription Podcast. This podcast is all about helping you live a longer, happier, and healthier life. We will be featuring conversations with great minds to inspire you to reach your ultimate potential. My name is Muzammil Ahmed. I'm a medical student with a master's in psychology, certification in nutrition, and a bachelor's in business.
And my name is Cass Warbeck. I'm a medical student with a bachelor of science in health and fitness physiology, and I'm also a plant-fueled Muay Thai fighter. We are both plant-based lifestyle advocates who are passionate about spreading positivity, optimizing health, and promoting sustainability.
Hello, friends. We have Chuck Carroll, the weight loss champion, joining us today. Chuck has an incredible story to share. He once weighed 420 pounds and had tried countless times to lose weight with no long-term success. He was severely addicted to food and estimates he was eating nearly 10,000 calories every single day. In 2009, as one last effort, Chuck decided to try weight loss surgery at only 27 years of age. He was skeptical that even this last desperation attempt would help him keep maintaining a healthy weight. But amazingly, this seemed to be the wake-up call he needed, and from then on, he never looked back.
Ultimately, Chuck ended up losing a total of 280 pounds. In the process, he adopted a plant-based diet to which he attributes much of his success. Chuck then went on to pursue his dreams. He worked as a sports reporter, news reporter, and radio show host, and now has aligned his talents with his passion and hosts the iconic Exam Room podcast by the Physicians Committee. This conversation is downright inspirational. We hope Chuck's story will offer hope and light to those who need it and prove to anyone who doubts it that change is possible. Please share this episode with anyone who might need to hear what Chuck has to say.
Hey, Chuck, we're super excited to have you on our podcast. Recently got to be on your podcast, Exam Room podcast, so it's our honor to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me here, my friend.
We were thinking, let's start with your childhood and your upbringing. We want to hear what type of childhood you had and if that in any way played a role to your food addiction, as well as you gaining weight to the point that you ended up being 420 pounds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the seeds were definitely planted for obesity very young in life. Yeah, I grew up in a single-parent house. My mom and dad divorced when I was really young, and mom, of course, had to work, so that didn't leave a whole heck of a lot of time for her to be cooking in the kitchen. So more often than not, our dinner consisted of a trip through the drive-thru. But the thing is, even before my brother and I would get to the drive-thru, we had spent the afternoon at our grandma's house, and she inevitably would feed us something like potato chips or baked beans out of a can or French fries that had been fried in bacon grease, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. And just the standard American diet on steroids is the way that I put it. So when you eat that for lunch and then drive through for dinner, and not to mention, you know, whatever it was that I had for breakfast, probably some sugary cereal, and then the also, lunch number one at school is just a whole lot of calories, unhealthy calories at a young age. And, you know, knowing what I do now, the foods that I was eating that were so high in fat and salt and even a little bit of sugar there, I mean, all of those things can be super addictive. So my brain got trained very early on, like, I need this stuff. And so I got hooked. And as I got older and older, my portions continued to grow and grow and grow. And eventually, all the way up to 420 pounds.
That's kind of crazy that the type of food they feed children nowadays kind of just sets you up for failure. Like later on, if you're trained that way, your brain's like trained to have those constant endorphins coming from food. And how are you ever going to like healthy food if that's what you were fed as a child?
It took a lot, man. It took a lot to retrain this palate, let me tell you.
I believe you. So just for reference, can you tell us what your height is and how much you weigh now? And then we'll get to how you ended up being 420 pounds and losing that.
Oh, man. On a good day, I'm 5'6". Most days, I'm 5'5". And today, I weigh about 140 pounds.
All right. Wow. So that's... I'm really bad at math, but that's like a lot.
That's short.
No. I was talking about the weight loss, not about your height. You've lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, about 280. Yeah.
280 pounds. That's phenomenal. So what factors contributed to your food addiction? Like, you know, you already mentioned the food that was being, that you were being fed. Would you say like there were other factors? Like, do you generally have a addictive personality that just added to you wanting to, you know, be addicted to food?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be addicted to food, right. But I think addictive personalities certainly are a family trait for us. You know, a lot of us overeat quite a bit in the family. Others have other addictive issues. And, you know, I used to be a smoker as well. I didn't just smoke a little bit of cigarettes. You know, I was smoking two packs a day, if not more. When I drank to excess a lot of times. You know, and even, you know, smoking marijuana growing up too, you know, I wasn't just, you know, smoking it every now and again, you know, I was getting high 5 and 6 times a day. So addiction is, that is something that certainly is very, very familiar to me. But the funny thing is, it's like the weed, the booze, the cigarettes, all of that were so much easier to kick than fast food. Like, it's not even close. And people just don't have any concept of how addictive, you know, drive-through food can be.
Yeah, people don't understand that. It's almost like food addiction is looked, it's not seen as serious as some of these more illicit drugs and these other substances. And that's something that I think we collectively need to change how we perceive this. So I'm curious, as you were like growing up and you were obviously overweight going through middle school and high school, and what was your body image like? And did you try to diet through high school, and what did you try? Did you ever, I guess, attempt to get this food addiction under control?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I, like so many other people, I tried every diet known to man and woman, like just everyone, you know, it's so many yo-yo diets. In high school, I guess not so much, because I was also battling really severe depression. And so, you know, although I had friends and a lot of people would say he was pretty outgoing, I would miss like weeks, if not months or more, of school at a time. And certainly when I was at home, the last thing I was trying to do was diet and lose weight. You know, I was kind of stuffing my sorrows with pizza and burgers and things of that nature. So the dieting aspect didn't really kick in until a little bit later on in life as I got out of school. Body image was always kind of tough in high school because, you know, at that age, it's like you want to fit in and you have friends, but while you see your friends, they're dating people, you think there's absolutely no way that you could ever, you know, have a relationship with the person, because why would they ever want to go out with somebody who's so overweight? So your self-esteem is really kind of shot. And then, yeah, every now and again, you would get, you know, these, you know, sharp little comments from people, or other people would call me Heavy C as opposed to the rapper Heavy D, which it was all in jest. But at the end of the day, you know, all of that, it's just like a small little dagger every time you hear something like that, even though it's just kind of meant in jest. It does take a toll on your self-esteem. So the body image really was not all that great.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So it's hard because it's such a vicious cycle, because you mentioned you had depression, but then I imagine it's all tied together. Like, being so overweight just kind of feeds the depression, and it's, you can't eat healthier. You can't give your body what it needs to truly be healthy when you're in this state of depression. So did you ever, I guess, did you talk to physicians about this? Were you on like any medications for any of these concerns?
Oh yeah. I mean, my stack in my doctor's office, my file was like this thick, right? I mean, it was a freaking encyclopedia. So I had multiple conversations. I went on antidepressants at a very young age. I mean, I'm not even sure that I was out of elementary school, maybe a year or two, is when I was first given Prozac. And certainly it was before my 13th birthday. And so those conversations were always there. Didn't really know what triggered it. Didn't know if there was a family history of this. All I knew was that the day to day was, it was tough. It was tough to get by. And then the medications increased, as I got a little bit older. I mean, I was still in high school when they put me on blood pressure medication as well. Wow. So ask if there are conversations with doctors. I said, yeah, absolutely. I had a lifetime's worth before I even turned 18.
So was there any conversation when they were discussing your depression and mental state, was there any conversation about what you're eating? Like, did the doctors connect the dots?
Hell no. not at all. They did not really touch on that one little bit. The only thing that they were worried about was the type of food that I was eating and how much I was eating. But it was still that very vague prescription of, well, you need to diet and lose weight. Well, how do you diet? I don't know, just lose weight then. And so like that was the extent of the conversations I have with people about nutrition until many, many years later.
That's very unfortunate. So was high blood pressure and diabetes the only concern while you were overweight, or were there any other health concerns that you had?
Oh man, I mean, I was chronically ill. So that the high blood pressure was the big one. Diabetes, never was diabetic, luckily. Certainly well on my way, but never officially crossed that threshold. But I was always sick. So you remember how I was saying that my doctor's file was this thick? It was because I was every month, every 2 months, I was coming down with chronic sinus infections that would very rapidly turn into bronchitis, from time to time pneumonia. And that was just it. And I remember being maybe 13, almost 14, and just getting strep throat in the eighth grade time and time and time and time again, like literally back to back to back. I had 4 bouts of strep throat to the point when they had to remove my tonsils. And that finally was able to clear that up. But, you know, it's just, I was not healthy. And still at this point, even though I was getting chronically ill time and time and time again, I was not equating that at all with what it was that I was eating. And how was I to know if my doctors weren't connecting those dots either?
Yeah. No, absolutely. So at what point were you like, okay, you know, enough is enough, I need to make a change?
Many times, many, many times. But I think you're probably asking about the time that it kind of stuck for good. And there had been a number of things that had happened in the year or two leading up to that, that just were kind of, you know, the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. And it was one, dating a woman who refused to acknowledge that we were in a relationship. She was much smaller than I was, did not have a weight problem. And there I was, close to 400 pounds at that point. Even though I was on the radio and, you know, some people knew me, like she was still ashamed to be with me, begged me not to tell my friends or family. Certainly she didn't tell her parents or even her closest friends. I had to beg her for a year and a half. And she just kept us under wraps. The other thing that happened that was pretty traumatic was friends of mine wanted to organize an intervention for me because I had just lost a lot of weight, like 80 pounds, and then put all of it back on. And then some, as I had done time before, except this time that and then some was a lot. And so that is what really got me up to 420 pounds. But even after I got wind of this intervention, and I was angry, and I called up the guy who was organizing it, who was a very good friend of mine, and I just read him the riot act. Even then, I wasn't ready to change because I knew that I had a problem, but it's just like anybody who's struggling with any sort of addiction. It's like, if you're not ready, it's just not going to happen. But that stuck with me. And then there was a flight across country where I could not fit into my seat. I couldn't even come close, and I had not flown in years, and I was sweating. I was just dreading boarding the plane that day. And as I got on the flight, I just remember everybody stopping what it was that they were doing and turning to look at me. And just in my mind, I could just hear them praying, like, please God, don't let this guy sit next to me. And I purposely booked a seat all the way in the very last row so I could be by myself. And I just had to shimmy down the aisles and kind of turn so my frame would actually make it down the aisle. And when I finally got to my seat, I sat down and tried as I might to connect the belt. It just wasn't happening. It wasn't coming anywhere close. And I remember like lifting up my big stomach and trying to sneak it underneath of my gut. And even then it wasn't happening. So I had to get up, walk all the way back to the front of the plane, everybody staring at me again, only this time I had to ask the flight attendant for a seatbelt extender so we could take off. And then with my head sunken and a heavy heart, walk all the way back to my seat in the back of the plane, sit down and basically, you know, wept as we took off and flew across country. And so when you put those things together, that was really kind of the tipping point. And then the health concerns that I couldn't even walk more than 10, 15 feet without my chest starting to tighten, like literally heart attack, scary, starting to tighten, and color draining from my face and just sweating, just pouring, dripping down sweat, even if it was ice cold outside. I knew that if I did not make a change very, very soon, I was not going to live to see 30.
Wow. Gave
me chills.
Yeah, I'm sorry you experienced all that. And like, say, thank you for being so open and sharing the story. I'd like to just touch back on, like, if it's a food addiction and these foods that you're eating, you're craving these foods just like other people may crave a drug. Can you explain, like you mentioned earlier, that the doctors might ask, like they were worried about the quantity of food you were consuming. Can you just maybe describe like how much exactly were you eating to maintain 420 pounds? Like what did your daily diet look like? And then maybe perhaps how did you feel if you didn't get these foods?
Oh boy. All right, here we go. So my max was 10,000 calories a day, the bulk of which was comprised of Taco Bell. Taco Bell was my heroin. It was my cocaine. It was my alcohol. Taco Bell was my everything. And I had a $20 a day Taco Bell habit. And it got so bad that they knew me. They knew my car. And so long before I even got to the order board, they saw me coming and they just told me what my total was and to please drive through. And so I, you know, it was like 2 7-layer burritos, 2 beef grilled stuffed burritos, nachos Bel Grande, chicken quesadilla, caramel empanada, some cheesy potato burritos. And I'm not even sure that they even make those, which the thought of them now is just disgusting. It's like fried potatoes with just grade F beef. Some nacho cheese on there, some chili sauce, probably a little more cheese. At the time, it tasted delicious, but now the thought of it makes me want to gag. But anyway, I love that stuff. And so that was my dinner every night. But before then, you know, I thought I was doing good because I never ate breakfast. I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to cut one meal out. And so 0 calories, I'm doing great. For lunch, I would go across the street from my office was a restaurant called Boston Market, and I would eat a half of a whole chicken and 2 or 3 large sides. But then what made that healthy was the diet lemonade that I would get to drink with that, right? So saving calories. Forget the fact that, you know, I thought that creamed spinach was healthy at that point. I thought that the chicken, because it was roasted, was healthy at that point. And really, a little bit of macaroni and cheese isn't going to hurt you, right? Well, it wasn't until later that I realized that I'd eaten well over 2,000 calories in that single meal. On my way home, I would always stop at 7-Eleven and I would get 6 things, these little things called taquitos. They're with the hot dogs at 7-Eleven. And I would order 6 of those always on my way home and drink 2 big things of Gatorade. Often, I would also order pizza and I would get like 5 or 6 pizzas at a time and just have them in the fridge at the ready. So I would eat, you know, 1, maybe 2 pizzas a day and then polish the day off with the Taco Bell. And so that's how I got to 10,000 calories a day. And that's why my waist was just expanding so quickly that my friends were like, whoa, we need to talk to him. The thing is, though, like any drug, if I did not get my fix, my brain would freak out. And it was like a switch would flip. Like usually, even at that weight, like I tried to be a really pleasant, happy-go-lucky, kind of a fun guy, right? But if I didn't get my fix, I was a jerk. And I'm not even going to use the word, but I mean, I was that word. And I began to feel sick after the first night. The second night, I'm just in bed and I get enraged to the point where even though I'm feeling sick, I'm feeling like I got the flu and I don't want to talk to anybody. I got up out of bed one night and I put my fist through a wall just because I wasn't going to Taco Bell. I wanted it so much. And then when that didn't make me feel any better, I put my fist through a door. And then after everybody finally went to bed, I mean, it was just the middle of the night. I snuck out of the house and I went to the 24-hour drive-thru, ordered my $20 worth of food, got back to the house, ate every piece of it, but like just again, just as I did on that flight across country, like I just wept because at that point I really knew like, whoa, I've got a major, major, major problem here and something needs to be done. It was a harsh reality check.
Wow. It's interesting how these foods are engineered in a way to pretty much physiologically control you. Like it seems like from your story, the food was controlling you, was telling you it needs to be eaten because of all the cravings you were getting. And it's insane how these foods are engineered that way. So then when you did finally decide, I'm going to make a change, what were the steps that you initially took?
Well, I didn't even know really what to do. Because remember, until then, the only thing I knew about getting healthy was that vague prescription for diet and exercise that I had been told by my doctors. I did know that my parents, my father and my stepmother had had bariatric surgery. They had gastric bypass. And my father, in particular, had lost a tremendous amount of weight. He too was heavy, not quite as heavy as I ever got, but he was up there and really got down, probably lost close to 200 pounds and then began to put it back on. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this because it's really all I know how to do. And at least at this point, I can go to my grave saying that I tried everything. And so I did. So I went and I had bariatric surgery, fully expecting that, okay, well, this will get me to my 30th birthday, but now 40 becomes the question mark because I fully expected to put all of that weight on and then some, because a lot of people think, man, like bariatric surgery is this cheat way out. And it's not, because you still have to modify your lifestyle and your eating habits just as you would, you know, if you didn't have it. Because if you don't, your stomach is so elastic, man, it'll just expand right back out. And even though, you know, with gastric bypass, a portion of your intestines are literally rerouted. I mean, you can still put enough fat and calories in there that you'll just balloon right back up. And so I thought that was the route that I was going to take. But I mean, knock on wood, I just kind of woke up and decided never to go back.
So you did go through the gastric bypass surgery. Did you have to lose weight to be eligible for that?
They put me on, here's the beauty thing of it. So more vague prescriptions for diet and exercise. It was a 6-month battle because I was still young. And in the eyes of my insurance company, I was still a healthy individual, which is absolutely asinine. How you can say anybody who's over 400 pounds is healthy is beyond me. But whatever, that was the 6-month battle to finally get them to acquiesce and to greenlight the surgery. So I was on this medically supervised diet, but all the while, my food addiction is still raging and I'm actually putting on more and more and more weight, you know? So like when we started this process, I was like right at 400 pounds. 6 months later, that's when I'm at 420. That's when I actually reached my absolute max weight. So that medically supervised diet without menus or guidance or anything like that was a joke.
Wow. I can't imagine. All right. So I'm assuming, so you had the surgery. I'm actually curious, what was the surgery like for you? Like coming out of it, what was like the rehab from that? Like, how did you feel going home afterwards?
Oh my God. It was like being hit by a truck. So they did not do mine laparoscopically. They actually opened me up. And so they went through my core muscles here in my abdomen. And so that was really, really kind of rough. Really do. You hear that phrase, like you feel like you've been hit by a truck. And for the first time in my life, I did. And in a way, I guess maybe I'm a little bit grateful that I had that experience, because that also was like, there is no way I'm going back and doing this again. Even though I forgot to tell you this is just brilliant, right? even though the surgeon will tell you before the surgery, when you go in for that initial consultation, if this one doesn't work for you and you put weight back on, no problem. Come back in and we'll do a revisionist surgery on you. Like, they'll staple your stomach a second time. Like, who the hell wants to do that? You know, especially after feeling like this. So I'm like, no. One time is enough. So the recovery was long. It was really like 3, 4, 5, 6 months before I was able to eat like really solid food again. And so you start with liquids, then you progress to pureed and then soft foods and then eventually a regular diet. But you know, for the first couple of weeks, you don't even want to eat. Like it can just be so brutal. And I'll tell you the funny thing, like when I knew that my life was changed forever was about the third day when I was being released from the hospital and somebody close to me brought me just a black cup of coffee from McDonald's. And, you know, like, here, I know you can still drink black coffee, just sip on this. Fine, black coffee, whatever. But the fact that it was from McDonald's infuriated me. Because at that point, Taco Bell and fast food went from being my best friend, my everything, to becoming my sworn enemy. And so there would be no more Happy Meals. Like there was nothing happy about a Happy Meal. The Golden Arches were my enemy. I wanted nothing to do with it. And so that cup of coffee, it just ticked me off. And so I was just like, I'm never going through another drive-through again. And mind you, this was still years before I knew anything about a plant-based diet. I just knew what had put me there. And I knew that I now had this like 3-month window to detox off of this crap. And I knew how hard it had been to detox before that. I knew I already felt like garbage. So let's just plow through it and never look back. And so that was it, man. More than anything, just being forced to go through that detox was the biggest thing that surgery did.
So what went down from the time you got your bariatric surgery to discovering plant-based nutrition and deciding to do plant-based diet?
Oh man, what went down? Jeez Louise, about 6 years, a couple of horrible, horrible relationships, some amazing, amazing career moves. yeah, just a whole lot, man. But that's for another podcast. Mm-hmm. I had always kind of been health conscious initially. I started off by going with what I thought was healthy, you know, like MetaFast. That's a big thing post-surgery is, you know, these MetaFast stay skinny bars and, you know, prepackaged meals and things like that. Again, nobody had told me anything about what it truly meant to be healthy. And so I really relied heavily on that. Luckily, at my high school reunion, my 10-year, this girl who I always had a crush on in high school had been following my weight loss progress on Facebook. Turns out she was a nutrition nut and she was really into holistic nutrition. And so she started coaching me up on a few things as we began to date. And she was not plant-based by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, it was the first time that I really took a deep dive into nutrition labels and the importance of produce, you know, fresh foods, whole foods. And you know, so even though, like I said, there was like some chicken and some fish and eggs still on the menu at that point, I was starting to feel a lot better taking all of that ultra processed stuff off of my plate. After she and I broke up, because that turned out to be just a horrible idea. Like, I'm really grateful for the nutrition tips, but most people in this life, let's be honest, again, this is for another podcast, but let's be honest, most people in this life have that one relationship that they wish never happened. This was it. Anyway, I digress. So a few years later, I'm interviewing a pro wrestler by the name of Austin Aries. And I was writing a column for CBS at that point. And he was putting out this book called His Plant-Powered Journey, you know, through pro wrestling. And he was like, dude, you just need to give it a try. He gave me a list of some documentaries to watch. And I did. And I thought that I had been doing really, really well. And then it was like everything else started to kind of fall into place once I tried a plant-based diet. And I went from feeling a lot better than I did at 420 pounds to now feeling like fan fantastic. Like, let's go and let's just keep learning more and more and more and just kind of devoting my life to it. And then learning about all the other incredible success stories that people have had, you know, beyond, you guys know this, beyond more than just weight loss. You know, we're talking about people who have saved their life by reversing heart disease and diabetes, you know, cancer patients who are going through treatment, but faring so much better than everybody else in their chemo groups because of what it is that they're eating. And more specifically, also what it is that they're not eating. And so when you see all of these things, and then you get an opportunity also to look into the research, do that research for yourself. It's like, things could have been so much different 6 years ago if I would have known about this. I may not have even opted to have weight loss surgery had I known about this. I don't regret that decision, but I will say I wish that I knew about plant-based dieting back then.
Yeah, like say, it's incredible the progress you made. And that was actually one of the things I was curious about is, if you hadn't have had the weight loss surgery, do you think you would have been able to lose all this weight?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest with you. I would love very much to say yes, but I also know that as addicted as I was to food, it literally would have taken sending me to a long-term rehabilitation center where I did not have access to that kind of contraband. It would have taken a monumental effort, because so many times before I would try and I would fail. And there were those instances where I would sneak out in the middle of the night. You know, even after I put my fist through the wall and the door and snuck out that night, that wasn't the first time that I had done these clandestine middle of the night missions to Taco Bell. Like, that had happened so many times. I was endorsing something called the cookie diet. I was being paid to do a diet on the radio, you know, where you eat two cookies, you eat one for breakfast, one for lunch, and you eat them and you drink a whole bunch of water, and they're supposed to expand in your stomach and keep you full. And then for dinner, a sensible dinner. What does that mean? I don't know, but you better eat it. And that's how you lose weight, and then go to the gym. And so that didn't work. And all of the other gimmicky diets before that, that didn't work. And it didn't matter the fact that they were paying me. They were matching my actual salary. I was making twice as much money as I ever had in my entire life to lose weight. And that still wasn't enough. I was still sneaking out to go to Taco Bell while singing the praises for this particular diet. And so when I think about all of that, I don't know. I know that there are people who have done it, and I am like just so bust my buttons proud of them. I don't know if that could have been me without a significant amount of support.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate the honesty. That's great. So when you did start the plant-based diet, were you at the 140 pounds mark or around there?
No, I was up closer to 165 at that point. So I had gotten down to about my previous low was like 155, and I had been hovering right around there for a while, and then, you know, started to creep up a little bit. And then I got into a plant-based diet and the rest of the weight just kind of fell off, and I haven't weighed 140 pounds since probably sixth grade, fifth grade, something like that. I remember I was well over 100 pounds by the time I was in second or third grade. So this is still kind of new to me. And even though now I've been plant-based for a number of years anyway, I still wake up every day and just kind of have this pinch me moment. Like, I still don't associate myself with being a 140-pound individual. I forever, I think, will feel like I am that 420-pound man.
Wow. Yeah, I bet. So I want to talk about these other diets you might have been on, because most of them tend to be very restrictive. And my understanding is the more restrictive the diet is, the more likely you're going to binge later. Is that what you also experienced?
Oh, yeah. Because you're told time and again what you can't have. And so psychologically, you know, we're going to want what we're told that it is that we can't have. That's just human nature, right? Especially when it's something that you've been so addicted to and you've enjoyed so much, something like fast food for me. Yeah, of course you're going to binge, because they give you also like these little itty bitty teeny tiny portions that are supposed to satisfy you, as if magically you go from eating $20 worth of fast food to eating this one little, you know, tub of food that's not much bigger than your cell phone, and that's supposed to fill you up. Like, I don't know what kind of planet that they're living on, but that is just a bunch of phooey, because not once did any one of those meals, whether it was MetaFast or SlimFast or Jenny Craig or Weight Watchers, not once did any one of those things ever fill me up, nor did they particularly taste good, to be honest with you. And so, like, portions were just, that's as hard as getting rid of the food itself, because you're used to filling your stomach just to the absolute max point. And so even though my stomach was really the size of a football, I was filling it up with enough food maybe that was the size of a golf ball, man. That's not going to work.
Yeah. So what is it? Yeah, what is it about plant-based diet that, because some people might say, oh, that's a restrictive diet, you're eliminating foods. So why is it that that has worked for you a lot better than like previous diets that were very restrictive?
Because a plant-based diet, when done properly, quote unquote, is not calorically restrictive. It is nutrient dense, but it is not calorically dense. And so you can eat a pound of mangoes or a pound of spinach and be absolutely stuffed like it's Thanksgiving and be just fine, right? You know, the amount of fat and the calories in that, like you're going to be great. But if you go and you eat that much fast food, you're going to feel like garbage, even though you're still going to be full. But with a plant-based diet, you don't really have that problem. And there's such a wide array of fun foods that you can eat and you know, just things that you can mix together. And so it's important with any diet that you're not starving. Like you said, man, the more restrictive it is, the more likely you are to fail. And the one thing that the plant-based diet is not is restrictive. Because even in the case of meat and dairy, there are enough alternatives that you can still, you know, please that palate. You know, it's not like you will never get that mouthfeel, which is like the weirdest term in the world. But if you like steaks, you know, there's enough ways to replicate that. Same thing with hot dogs and hamburgers and things like that. And almond milk is straight up delicious. So it's all good, man. Like the plant-based diet is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of plant-based people and a lot of vegans, they actually say that once they went vegan, we eat so much more variety now than we ever used to. And I know that's true for myself, and I know that's true for a few other people that have transitioned. So I'd like to touch back on just one thing. And a lot of the dietary advice people are given or that's kind of thrown out there is everything in moderation, eat sensibly, common sense. What are your thoughts on this? Like, we don't go around and tell an alcoholic to drink in moderation. So why is it fair to tell someone that's food addicted to eat their drug of choice in moderation? Like, just what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think you're my new best friend for bringing this up. That is a fantastic point. Because people still don't look at food as being this addictive substance. They just don't. You know, it's because everybody has to eat. And it's so ingrained in our culture. You know, you celebrate with food. You mourn with food. You wake up, you eat. At lunch, you eat. At dinner, you eat. Eat, eat, eat. You have to eat. And so it's just, it's so commonplace that it's so easy for wool to be pulled over everybody's eyes. But once people actually look at food for what it is or what it can be on the unhealthy side of things, like then they will start to make that connection. But 99% of the people out there, they just have not made that connection yet. And so that's why people say, you know, have these cheat days, or they'll reward themselves like, I lost 20 pounds. I reached my goal weight. I'm going to go eat a whole cake. But the problem is, when you have people who have that addictive personality, and I would argue there are far more food addicts out there than people realize, they can't just have that one cake. It is like having that cigarette after 10 years and thinking, oh, I can have just one. No, you can't, because the next day you're buying another pack of cigarettes. Or you give an alcoholic a beer and you think, one won't hurt. Problem is, yes, it will. The next thing you know, that alcoholic is buying a sixer and, you know, they're completely off the wagon. It's a real problem. And until people realize just how powerful of a pull food can be, you're going to have these situations where people get peer pressured into eating the things that they had taken out of their diet. And essentially when they do, they will be shooting themselves in the foot and derailing so much of the progress they had just made. Happened to me time and again. I remember one particular time I had lost a ton of weight, probably 60 pounds. And I was working at a Mexican restaurant and I thought, man, I got this. I can have one nacho and I will be good to go. And I did. I had my one nacho. I dunked it in the nacho cheese and that tasted pretty good. So that one nacho led to two and led to three, and then a whole plate of nachos and then a burrito loaded with everything on it that I shouldn't be eating. And alas, all the weight came pouring back on. And so I kind of refer to what it is that you were talking about as my one nacho theory, because a lot of people can't have that one nacho. They just can't do it.
It's so well put, because I see it time after time how people say moderation is fine when it comes to food, and then they still keep struggling with losing weight. And it's the exact same thing you explained, that it just, I don't believe moderation really, really, truly works, especially if that's your drug of choice. So if someone is struggling with food addiction or obesity and they don't know where to start, what advice would you give that person?
First thing to do is kind of take a page out of a lot of addiction playbooks, and just the first step is just admitting that you have a problem and recognizing that it's not necessarily your fault that you are in the position that you are in. You know, like, I didn't choose to become a Taco Bell addict. The choices that I made led me to be there, but there were also, you know, people who were kind of like working to, you know, against me to make sure that I kept coming back, and created that food to be as addictive as possible. And so, like, recognize that you got a problem. You're going to be fighting an uphill battle, and just be honest with yourself too. Like, it is going to suck. It is going to suck to change at first, because your brain, your body, it's going to spaz out, and it is going to scream, and it is going to cry out for the things that you have been eating for so long and that you become hooked on and addicted to. But the thing that you need to keep in mind is that eventually it will pass. Just as if you've ever quit smoking, eventually those cravings subside. Or if you've been an alcoholic and you're able to overcome that addiction, eventually those cravings subside. Same thing for drugs. It will subside over time. You just have to be patient with yourself and believe in yourself enough to know that you can get past it. And even to this day, the funny thing is, like, I will still get cravings for things out of the blue. And I know that the craving will pass, and that if I give into it, I'm going to be a lot more angry than I am in this moment while I'm wrestling with the addiction. And so you just grit your teeth and get through it. Just take a deep breath and know that you'll get there. And the thing also with the plant-based diet is, you can eat, you can be full, it's not restrictive. And because you're so full, you're also going to be less inclined to have these cravings to go out to Burger King, Taco Bell, McDonald's, whatever the case may be. You're going to be satiated as it is. So those cravings maybe will even be less intense, and that'll help you out too.
Beautiful advice. And thank you for your insight. Like, your story is inspirational, and I truly hope people can learn from your wisdom and your experience. So we'd kind of like to transition in a little bit of a lighter topic here just to finish out. You host the Exam Room podcast, as we mentioned before, and you're partnered with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. So how did this all come about?
So cool story. After I lost weight, I got this surge of confidence, right? And it kind of gave me the opportunity to ask myself the question that we get asked as kids. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Even though I was well into my 20s at this point, I was like, I've always loved sports. I've always wanted to be, you know, a football reporter. And so I started my own sports media company. I started covering the NFL. And one of the players here for the pro team in Washington, he and I became friends. We started to do a radio show together and started talking about my weight loss. Well, eventually, the Physicians Committee got wind of the show and invited us in to come in and speak and learn about plant-based diets. They featured us in a healthy eating campaign. And so that kind of planted the seed. And I continued on in my job as a sports reporter, and then later graduated into news. But then once I got tired of covering death and destruction, I was like, I want to do something more positive, right? So I had fully embraced plant-based eating at that point, and I knew that I wanted to give back and have the opportunity to inspire other people. So I pitched them the idea of doing this show. We had a series of meetings, and then within a matter of just a few months, we were releasing the first episode. And so it really is just a byproduct of confidence gained by doing something that you thought was impossible and now just having a ton of fun with the new lease on life.
That's amazing. And I love what you're doing. The Exam Room podcast is one of my favorite podcasts and I've been listening to it for a long time. So whoever's listening definitely has to check out that podcast. I do want to go back quickly to something we had discussed that I had a question about. We had talked about depression and how you had struggled with depression, but I don't think we ever talked about how you finally came out of depression and how food you losing weight may have played a role in that. So if you could just touch on how your mood got better over time and how you're doing now.
Oh yeah, man, definitely way fewer dark days. I wouldn't say that it's 100% cured, but there are so many fewer dark days now, it's not even funny. I didn't realize it at the time, certainly, like I said before, like I had no idea how big of a role food was playing in this. And I suppose now, after speaking with so many people, that it really had to do with you know, just kind of the way that unhealthy food was just wreaking havoc on my gut bacteria and that gut-brain connection and how that can just go haywire if the gut isn't functioning properly, man. So I think that really had a lot to do with it. And I think that, you know, it's a couple of things. So one, the gut bacteria gets, you know, back in check, right? And you're feeling good and you're having good connections between your belly and your brain. But the other thing also is it goes back to that surge of confidence that I was just talking about. It's like you believe in yourself. And when you have that belief in yourself, that can kind of be a very powerful thing for you, even on your darkest of days when you're just not feeling good. Maybe you've had a fight with your significant other, whatever the case may be. You're having frustrations at the job. The one thing that nobody can take away from you is the feeling that you have of overcoming and doing the impossible. And I don't care what kind of a day you're having, man, that will always put a smile on your face. So that also lifts the gray clouds, you know, causes them to part and for the sun to come out. And so you put all of that stuff together and really it's helped tremendously. And people ask this and yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like I am about 95% better with depression. There are still, you know, some of those days when I'm just like, don't talk to me, but we all have bad days too, right? And I know that I'll get past it. And I know that unlike when I was back in school, I'm not going to be missing months and weeks of school at a time and just holing up in a deep, dark place emotionally and physically. I know that I have enough in me to pull myself up, go on, do the show, which inspires me and makes me feel better anyway. And tomorrow's always going to be better. And so like that, man, that is the power of plants.
Beautiful, beautiful. Because I think it's really important to mention how you brought up the gut-brain connection, that if you are fueling yourself with the right nutrients, you're giving your body power to fight these type of problems that you might be predisposed to, like depression. It may not go away, but at least you have the strength to be able to fight it, if not all the time, most of the time. So I'm really glad you brought that up. So we have three questions that we ask at the end to all of our guests. The first question is, what is your favorite plant-based meal?
My favorite plant-based meal. That would be the big salad that I eat almost every night. And it changes almost every night too, just based off of what I have in the refrigerator. So for example, tonight, I'm going to crush a big salad with a spinach and romaine base. I'm going to throw some quinoa in there, probably some brown rice. I just roasted up a bunch of Brussels sprouts and red peppers. I'm going to throw those in there. I got some roasted sweet potatoes. I'm going to throw that in there. And then I'm going to take probably a little squeeze of lemon and I'm going to like just drench the top around that. And then I'm just going to mix it up real good. I'm going to have that with a whole wheat pita and some red pepper hummus. And that is my favorite meal. It's whatever this huge salad is that I have at the end of the day and the ingredients that I have in the refrigerator. I love closing every day with this thing. It is the joy of my life.
So good.
I can hear the passion. I'm a fan of huge salads too. I can totally relate. What is one kitchen item you wouldn't be able to live without?
Ooh, man, Vitamix. I'm sure that you have heard this answer more than once, man.
Yes.
But the Vitamix is a very magical piece of machinery. It is a game changer, man. It totally is a game changer. Dude, that thing is so powerful. You can blend a bowling ball. I got so excited when I learned that you can drop a whole apple in there, man. And you can get like all the nutrients, you know, from stem to core to everything in between in there, man. It's just like the most incredible piece of machinery in the world. And the flavors, the way that it's able to extract flavors and the sweetness from fruits, so you don't have to add things like sugars and syrups and things like that to sweeten things up, man. It just draws the sweetness out, and oh my gosh, is it so good.
You just did an advertisement for vitamins. I love it. What is one final piece of advice or takeaway you would like to leave for our listeners?
Believe in yourself. Absolutely. If you are struggling with your weight, believe in yourself. Even if you're not struggling with your weight, I can virtually guarantee you that there is an aspect of your life that you're struggling with and you wish that you were doing better in. Believe in yourself, because you have it within you to do better. You have it within you to become the person that you've always wanted to be. Go back to that question that we were talking about earlier in the show. What do you want to be when you grow up? If you're unhappy in your job, wake up tomorrow. Ask yourself that question. Formulate a plan. If you think that you could never lose weight, if you are 420 pounds and think, I could never do what he did, you can. Believe in yourself. It's going to be a challenge, but every single person on the face of this earth has it within them to overcome the obstacles that life puts in front of them. Everybody. Nobody is Superman. And if one person is Superman, then we're all Superman or Superwoman. Everybody can be that superhero then. Everybody has the power of change within them. And so that is always my one piece of advice.
Thank you so much for that. So if anything you said resonated with our listeners, which I'm sure some of it did, where can they find you?
Please check out the podcast over on Apple Podcast or Spotify. Look for The Exam Room by the Physicians Committee. Go ahead and give that a subscribe. Like, we're about to hit 150 regular episodes. There's a few bonus ones in there, but really, a 150 episode mark is fantastic. So subscribe, and really, it's taking off right now. You can also find us on the Physicians Committee's Facebook and YouTube channels every weekday, Monday through Friday, noon Eastern. We do The Exam Room Live, where I get the opportunity to chat with the likes of Dr. Neil Barnard and other industry leaders about the latest in nutrition and science. And it's just really fantastic. So the show is taken off. And then on social media, at Chuck Carroll, WLC. WLC is standing for Weight Loss Champion. And that's pretty much where you can find me. Yeah.
You're definitely a champion. We'll definitely put all that in the show notes so people can easily find you. Well, thank you so much, Chuck, for being on here. This was an amazing episode.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to the Plant Prescription Podcast. We really hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully this inspires you to take steps towards making changes so you live a longer, happier, and healthier life.
You can also follow us on Instagram, where we share nutrition, health, and fitness content, along with recipes. Our Instagram handles can be found in the description of this episode. Please make sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any upcoming episodes. If you enjoyed this, we would love it if you left us a positive review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Please also make sure to share this with any family or friends who may benefit. Thank you so much for listening.
Also, be sure to eat plenty of plants, and see you next week.